Welcome back in the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720 WGN. Our favorite wannabe Martian, Sonia Von Meter, is on the phone. Hey, Sonia, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. It's funny that I even introduce you as that because it makes no sense because all we talk about is politics because you're a Democratic opposition researcher. But we'll briefly tell the story again. There were a million different private missions to Mars once upon a time, and one of them was looking for 100 people to go live there for the rest of their lives. You not only volunteered, you made it like through like three layers of interviews, and then they kind of stalled out with funding. Is that about right?
That's exactly right. The Endeavor is still out there trying to raise some money, and I'm still technically on the short list. But, you know, when you got to raise $6 billion to rocket some people off into space and leave them there, as you might imagine, fundraising can be a little difficult.
It's funny because if your thing had just been thought of by, say, Jeffrey Bezos or Elon Musk, you maybe would be planning your trip right now. But because somebody else had the idea and they said, all we need is the $6 billion, it gets a little tougher.
Exactly. But you know what? I have faith that somebody eventually will manage to pull this off. I just hope I'm still alive to see it when it happens.
Now, it's been a while since this whole thing, and you've had more time to think about it.
I have.
If Mr. Bezos came to you and said, listen, I'm going to buy that thing, I'm taking it off their hands, and I got the money, and we got the ship, and I do like you for this, are you still on? Are you still in?
100%.
Really?
Absolutely. So, no question.
I'm guessing maybe it's just gotten a little stronger over the last 4 years.
Oh, I can't imagine why you'd think anybody wants off this planet right now, Matt. It's not like things aren't just going so beautifully, what with our government in chaos and our economy crumbling and a pandemic ravaging people.
Well, there's those things, but, you know, 2020 has a nice ring to it. We were all excited heading into the year.
Were we so young back then, ever hopeful and optimistic?
It does seem like we were like teenagers back when that hit, doesn't it? Y'all remember
it
back
seems,
then?
It seems like six lifetimes ago.
It really does. It's the craziest year ever. We're barely halfway through it. So let's talk about what's going on in the world of politics, because that is your world. That is where you work. You and I have talked a lot over the years. We talked leading up to the last election a lot. There was this feeling in the air that Hillary Clinton was going to be the president. That's amazingly long ago now. And now, what nobody thought could happened, President Trump. And then we've gone through, of course, everything since then. Now we're heading into another election where, again, it seems that months out that the Democrats will win the presidency. And, you know, I would think any Democrat would hesitate to feel confident about that after what happened 4 years ago and thinking that, you know, anything is a shoe-in or easy or anything like that. And while the polling is very good in these national polls, those are really misleading in some ways, aren't they? Because a national poll doesn't mean anything because we have an electoral college and it really can come down to just several states and something bouncing the right way for somebody or the other can change the whole thing.
And that's very true. Also, let's not forget that Hillary Clinton actually got about 3 million more votes than Donald Trump did. The Electoral College is a huge barrier, in my opinion, to representative voting. And I will cry that from the rooftops until my dying day. However, I feel like I need to point out that the polls that were going into the final weeks of 2016 were getting dangerously accurate. We were getting an indication that enthusiasm for Hillary was sliding, that Trump's numbers were climbing. There were a lot of things going on in the final moments of that campaign, not the least of which was James Comey reopening an investigation. There was a lot of tumultuous stuff going on, to say nothing of her campaign's ground game in places like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. One of the things that really encourages me now is that all of that, like all of the numbers have swung wildly in our favor. Like really, really impressively. You know, the fact that Trump is now having to spend money in Texas speaks volumes. Forget the polling. Look at where he's spending money to stay competitive in places where a Republican should have this locked up. And to make matters worse, you know, down ballot for Republicans, representatives and senators and people running for state assemblies and legislatures are realizing that an alliance with Trump ideology isn't necessarily the way to get through a general election. And the more he opens his mouth and cries about how unfair the media has been to him, the less he looks like the Teflon-crafted god that he was when he was first elected. And this is something the Democratic consultants are starting to talk about very quietly for fear that people catch wind. But I'm just going to go ahead and say this aloud. the thing that made Trump so impermeable last time was his utter unwillingness to accept reality. You know, he's a god in his own mind, and so he became a god to some of his supporters. But now the god is complaining about how the media is unfair to him. The god is complaining that our personal pain, our death tolls, our loss of jobs, you know, the people who support him, he's now complaining that those things aren't simply a symptom of an ailing world. It's somehow an affront to him. It's a personal offense to him, you know, that job loss is makes him look bad, and so it's an insult to him that, you know, coronavirus deaths reflect badly on him, and he feels like it's a personal assault on him. And those are things that are very, very real issues. This is not some academic discussion about foreign policy or even oil prices. This is something that is very, very real, and it's hitting home on kitchen tables across this country. And now, you know, what is the old adage about making God bleed? Like, all you have to do is make God bleed? Well, Trump is bleeding. He's bleeding all over the place. And, you know, Democrats, I understand why we're all reticent to get excited about polls, but now is the time to strike. The iron is, in fact, hot. Now is the time to make plays for states like Georgia and Texas, because we've never had a better opportunity. We are going to make gains in the House. I think it's highly likely that we flip the Senate, and I think I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud and probably jinx everything, but I think it's a damn near certainty that we have a President Biden come January.
Yeah, you are really killing me, because I'm going to really hate when I have you on the phone in January and I replay this tape for you and you go, I know, I don't know what went wrong.
Oh, you know what the best thing about this show is like, I think back to our first interview, you know, way back in 2016 when I thought we had this unlocked. I can't believe how unbelievably optimistic I was.
Yes.
Anyone that tells you they know what's going to happen on any given day in any given election, like, I don't want to say they're lying through their teeth, because we can make informed decisions, but, like, truly, no one ever really knows. But all of the signs, like, this is so, so, so much better than 2016. All of the signs say that 2020 is going to be a very good year for Democrats. I'll just leave it at that. And if I keep my hat in January, so be it.
Well, I guess you might as well live in the moment, right? Because you are going to be so miserable in January if this isn't true. You might as well not just prepare for the worst and not be disappointed. You might as well live in Happy Land for as long as you can. Hopefully you actually get to Happy Land, but if you don't, at least you had 6 months of living in Happy Land. You know?
Boy, that is really depressing, but also not wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
you gotta
take what you can get while you can get it. Okay, so, you know, it's interesting, though, as you were saying that, you know, you feel that what he was doing leading into 2016, people could, you know, there was a certain group that was buying in. You don't think that whole group is buying in right now? Or is it, I would guess more that there is a huge chunk, 85% of that group still buys in no matter what happens. Like he's always said, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, could still do that. But it's that 15% that just needs to sway a few different states that Hillary lost last time that would turn everything around?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. In 2016, it wasn't that Donald Trump was just so fan-freaking-tastic. It was also that Hillary Clinton was wildly hated by a lot of people in this country. You know, fair or not, she had a reputation, and certain people would sooner vote for the actual devil himself. And I'm not making any comparison. I'm just simply saying that there were plenty of people out there who were not under any circumstances going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And they voted for Donald Trump simply because they wanted a change. They didn't want another, you know, political family dynasty. They didn't want more business as usual. They wanted to shake up the system. And that's what they did. There are plenty of people who voted for Trump, not because they thought he was so awesome, but because he was something new and different and challenging. And of course, there are also the people who voted for him precisely because they loved how hard he owned the libs. God, I hate that saying, but there it is. You know, he made a whole shtick out of just owning the liberals, and for a Republican base that feels, you know, rightly or not, that, you know, the elitist academics and the ivory tower liberals and progressives and the ever progressive New York Times, Washington Post, and LA Times, and, you know, the rest of the media have all spent, you know, the last few years telling Republicans, well, you're wrong about this and you're wrong about that, and whatever slight they felt coming from the left and from society, Trump was a great sort of punchback. You know, he spoke to their feeling persecuted by their own communities, by their own country. And so, you know, but the problem is now we're 3 years into this, and we've got an evaporating economy. We've got a pandemic, you know, taking our friends and family away from us. We can't even send our children to school safely in the fall, which means more people are going to have to figure out homeschooling situations and childcare situations. You know, and Trump doesn't offer solutions to these problems. In fact, he just whines into every available microphone about how he's being judged so unfairly. I think, you know, the people that were pumped to see him in office before, at this point, they've got to, you know, there's still the fact that liberals hate him and they love that about him, but he's not really offering them anything other than that. And in the absence of leadership, you know, during a time like this, when there is just, you know, so much going on in this country that needs to be addressed by smart and compassionate people, this is just, it's not Trump's time anymore.
Well,
you know, I think people made their point with him in 16, saying, you know, the system needed to be shaken up, but he's just not offering anyone anything other than whining and, you know, trash talking progressives.
Well, you're counting on there not being enough love for those two things to reelect him, mm-hmm. and compassion and those things that you're hoping are not in short supply. But also, mm-hmm. Sonia, I wonder if, so he's not offering anything, okay. But mm-hmm. what he will offer is negative feelings towards whoever his opposition is. And so that's Joe Biden. And so I imagine that if he can't claim a great economy, he can't bring us out of this, he's going to start hitting up how bad things are going to be. It's going to be the, you know, to African Americans, what do you have to lose? Things couldn't get any worse. He's going to talk about how much worse things are going to get. That, you know, I had the greatest economy ever until that Chinese virus struck it down, but we're going to fight back. But if Joe Biden comes in, you lose the suburbs, the taxes are going to go through the roof. He's just going to harp on and try to plant seeds of negativity towards what's going to happen. And I imagine that's going to be the course that he tries to get. And is that going to be enough to work with people, to work on people who maybe voted for him last time, but are on the fence about voting for him again?
Well, I see your point for sure, and there are certain people that are gonna buy into that because fear is a very, very powerful motivator. But again, what we're seeing right now is not it's not performative, it's not ephemeral. This is what we're looking at, and corporations talk about this, social scientists talk about this, economists talk about this. What we're seeing right now is like a realignment. This is, you know, the country is changing rather radically, rather quickly in a lot of different ways. You know, it's not just the pandemic. It's not just the economy. It's not just education. It's not just Black Lives Matter. You know, we're going through some really profound, very systemic changes. And I don't imagine that we're going to be able to go back to what we were. And I think that people are starting to kind of get a sense of that. Because as we discussed, you know, like there's just so much on the table, and it is no longer an abstract, you know, concept. You know, like, you know, when Republicans, you know, wanted to talk about a new, you know, stimulus package and you know, economic relief for people that had, you know, suffered economically due to COVID, you know, the best they could come up with was, you know, cutting payroll taxes. Like, that doesn't mean squat if you no longer have a payroll. If you no longer have your company, if your employees no longer work for you, like that's the best that they can do. The sort of tried and true conservative platforms just don't get the job done. You know, like, you know, destroying healthcare in the middle of the pandemic is just not the way to go. Cutting taxes at a time when the economy is drying up is just not the way to go.
It's not the way to go if you're dealing in reality. If you care about the next decade or two decades of the country, right? It's not, uh-huh. because things are just going to get worse and worse. But I think that's where he's going to step up and say, listen, under Joe Biden, your taxes are going to go up. And he's going to put to Joe the test in these debates or whatever they end up having. What are you going to do? And Joe, I don't think, is going to lie and say, we're not going to raise taxes. We're not going to do this. The American people will pull through this. He's probably, as Democrats, for the better or for worse, tend to do, is be honest about, here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to raise some taxes. We're going to have to make some tough decisions. We're going to have to pull up by our bootstraps. Nobody wants to pull up anything by bootstraps. We want to go back to a roaring 20s economy of life and this and that. Blah, blah, blah. We're all so sick of the life right now to hear, yeah, it's going to get even tougher because we just printed $3 trillion worth of money and nobody worked and every bar closed and the airlines aren't flying. It's going to be hell here for a long time. Nobody seems to be realizing that we are headed for really catastrophic times financially. And Trump is going to promise, not under my watch, I'll print money all day long, and your great-grandkids, life's going to suck for them, but for us, it's still going to be good. And I think that people are going to buy into that.
I mean, there's certainly a chance. There's certainly a chance. But also, I mean, I think it would serve Biden well to, number one, just let Trump keep talking, because he doesn't have that kind of presence of mind, I don't think. You know, he's as you said, he's already sharing footage of his own America, you know, with police brutality and rioting and tear gas and blah, blah, blah. I've seen the ad. It's very, very scary. It looks like chaos. And he talks about how, you know, this is going to be your America under Biden. And it's like, well, you understand that those images actually came from your tenure as president, right? Again, I think that the American voter is only willing to be gaslit for so long before they realize that this just isn't working. And, you know, I mean, if we have to just New Deal this, if we have to go big government for a little while and really, you know, I mean, deal with economic stimulus packages and government programs, like, so be it. But what Americans want is to go more than about 45 minutes a day without having to think consciously, Donald Trump is the president and he's done something else that you know, directly impacts my own well-being and the well-being of my family.
Sonia, you have a lot of faith in the American voter, and I appreciate that, and I hope it's not misplaced, because while the country seems to be changing very rapidly, and I will agree with that, and that is good, and that was needed for a long time, right? I do worry, and I've talked about this quite a bit over the last few weeks, that the pendulum, I think whenever these things happen, whenever social change gets to the point where suddenly it breaks through, the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter right now, finally change is going to happen. Voices are rising. The straw finally broke the camel's back, whatever. We got to that place. But then things swing so far that all these people that started getting on board that agreed, I think, start falling off. So here in Chicago, we're seeing what's going on in Portland. Here in Chicago, they're tearing down the Columbus statues. The Columbus statue probably shouldn't be up. We're so far away from George Floyd when we're tearing down Columbus statues, or mm-hmm. or the mayor is just taking them down. So now it's taking off this whole other segment of the population. I worry that whenever we have social change like this, you know, it's just a natural thing. The pendulum swings way far the other way. And then mm-hmm. all these people that were on board and the white Americans out in the suburbs who don't know black people, who don't interact and are finally realizing this is what's going on in their world, want to step up. And when you see all these protests, so many white people, this is not just a black people's protest. This is an American protest. But then we get to the rioting, we get to the nonsense caused by whoever it is. And then you start losing people. And I worry that we have this incredible opportunity for change, and it's going to be lost under the weight of everything else that ends up dominating the headlines instead.
Well, I mean, and that's certainly a concern, but I don't think I'm telling you anything you don't know when I say that, you know, America is concerned with some very specific things right now. They're concerned with the response to COVID. They're concerned with getting schools open so that they can send their children back to school and so they can get back to work. And they're concerned with access to healthcare. You know, that is something we're seeing across the country in every poll, in every state, bar none. So, you know, and these are the highest priorities. You know, everything else is certainly important. But at the end of the day, the politicians who talk about those things, who talk about getting those things under control, you know, those are the people that are going to, to catch the attention. You know, I realized that, you know, it's really easy to click on images and advertisements and slogans that get your blood up, for sure. But, and you're right, I have an insane amount of faith in voters right now. And I always will, but I think that we're all hurting so much. You know, everyone is hurt from something, whether it's job loss or family loss or just, you know, generalized anxiety from living in such a tumultuous era, that what we want right now is a leader who makes us feel a little bit more calm. And someone observed that Joe Biden, for all of his silliness and all of his gaps and all of his, you know, political evolution over the years, the one thing that he does truly exceptionally well is mourning. He has lost so much family in such awful ways that he mourns in a way that is so familiar and speaks to us on an almost cellular level. And I think that at the end of the day, because he is not AOC, he is not Elizabeth Warren, you know, he is just Uncle Joe, who we know and remember. You know, he's inoffensive. It's not that Democrats are going to be super, super excited to vote for Joe, because most Democrats, you know, voted for someone else in their primary. But Joe represents peace. He represents a time from before that people remember and so desperately want to get back to. And he's not radical enough to scare off the center, but he's certainly progressive enough to have been the old white guy who was proud and humbled to stand, you know, second to the young black guy. You're not wrong. I'm not saying anything that you're saying isn't wrong. There are some very, very tumultuous times ahead of us, and there are a lot of problems with our voting system and, you know, what with, you know, outside forces, you know, still trying to infiltrate disinformation campaigns and what have you. I mean, there's still a lot of hurdles to climb or to get over. But I have faith, man. I have faith. I think we've got a real renaissance coming ahead of us once we get the damage under control.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left. So real quick, speaking of Joe Biden, is this his election to go out and win, or his election to stay out of the way of so he doesn't lose?
I think it's a little of both, to tell you the truth. You know, there are certain things that we need to hear from him. You know, we need to hear that he's got a plan. We need to hear that he understands. We need to hear that he wants to represent all Americans, not just the ones who agree with him. We need to believe that, you know, if we put him in charge, he's going to put other people in charge who know what they're doing and who have experience and training and education in the areas they're going to be responsible for leading. But we also definitely need him to stay out of the way and let Trump be Trump, because trumping is exactly what's leading to his crashing poll numbers. And I think that's part of the reason that he's waited so long to announce who his VP candidate is going to be, because the minute he does that, there's going to be something else we can hit him on. But if you've gone to any of his rallies, Trump's rallies lately, you'll notice there is no anti-Joe Biden sentiment anywhere. They're still wearing Hillary for president. Hillary for prison T-shirts, yeah. And saying things like "Trump that bitch" and all that kind of stuff. Excuse me, I'm not sure if I can say that, but the fact that they're still attacking Hillary when she's nowhere near a ballot right now,
yeah,
tells me that they haven't figured out how to hit Joe Biden. They have no idea. What are they going to do? Call him old?
Sleepy, right? Sleepy Joe.
Gas prone? Like, look at our president.
Yeah. Well, and this is what I think. If Joe ever gets out there and really starts doing public rallies again, all they got to do is make sure there's a good ramp that he just runs up and runs down at every rally, just to show that, hey, here's the difference. I'll run up and down this thing. I got no problem doing that.
Yeah, having a president who looks healthy and spry in the middle of a pandemic is definitely a good look on him.
Yeah,
definitely.
I would agree. We have a minute left. Texas is talking. There's a lot of talk, a lot of news articles about Texas going blue statewide. Is that really possible?
Oh, Matt, anything's possible. You know, the fact that Beto came within 3 points last time, and the fact that, you know, Donald Trump is not doing especially well. The fact that John Cornyn isn't anyone's hero the way that Ted Cruz was. Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it's possible. I think, you know, if MJ, you know, really hones her message and, you know, concentrates on getting out the vote in the districts where she really, really needs to concentrate that effort, and the rest of the state party and all the down ballot candidates, you know, really organize, I think it's possible. I'm not betting the farm. But I bet you a good hoagie.
So you are more confident in the presidency and even the possibility of the Senate flipping. You would put in that order the presidency flipping the Senate, Texas going blue. Would that be the order of confidence?
That is my order of confidence right now.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well,
shall we revisit this in November?
I think we shall. Yes, we absolutely shall. We will. And I hope that you don't have to have hot sauce on your hat when we do that.
Oh. Me too, brother. Me too.
Sonia Van Meter, she's at Bourbon Face, the greatest Twitter handle there is, at Bourbon Face on Twitter. Find out about her leanings, slightly Democratic. I don't know if anybody picked that up in the last half hour, and her hopes for to someday get to Mars, which will be either accelerated or decelerated come later November. Sonia, thanks so much for staying up with us.
My pleasure.
The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next here on 720 WGN.